Good morning, KGNU listeners. You are listening to A Public Affair. I'm your host, Tish Buford. In studio this morning, we have the lovely and very talented City Councilwoman-at-Large for Aurora, Angela Lawson. She's going to be joining us over the next half hour to discuss some ongoing pressing issues and initiatives that are coming up on November's ballot, and just talking about things that are going on for the citizens of Aurora that a lot of you may not be aware of, because we just finished a very, shall I say, intense and contentious Denver mayoral race. And now it's time to get into some of the policies and issues that need to be addressed for the citizens of Aurora. So, Angela, City Councilwoman, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for letting me come in, Tish. I really do appreciate it.
How long have you lived here?
I've lived in Colorado Springs most of my life. Okay. I grew up there, and I moved there in 1978. My dad was military, so that's how I got to Colorado. And then I moved to Aurora because I was working back. I was going back and forth at the Secretary of State's office, and I finally went to Aurora because I wanted to be able. I was able to afford to buy a home.
Okay.
And the diversity of the community.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm an Aurora resident as well.
Okay.
And I was there when my son was younger, back in the early 90s, and then I moved out to Denver, and then came back in 2006 and bought a home there, and I've been there ever since. And I think Aurora kind of gets a bad rap. Mm-hmm. At times, but I love living there.
Oh, I do too.
And it has so many different dialects and races and cultures and dialect too. I think we have
it's 140 languages spoken in our school system.
That is amazing.
It is. It's awesome.
And Aurora is the third largest city in Colorado, correct?
Yes, it is, and growing. We have 360,000 population right now, and we're at 170, our land mass is 170 miles, and we're only 50% built out.
How does that happen with such a booming population over the last several years?
It's just, I think a lot of people came to Aurora. It was affordable. That's why it brought me there. It was affordable out of any other jurisdiction. I moved to Aurora because I was able to buy something at a young age. But now, and I know we'll probably talk a little bit more about this, I have concerns about our housing and rents. I'm hoping that we're working on some things to probably address those issues in Aurora.
Now, do you see some of the same issues starting to happen in Aurora that were happening in Denver as far as regentrification and people being priced out of homes and neighborhoods that they've lived in for decades?
Yes, I do. If you look at our Northwest Colfax area, there's a lot of development that's happening, and I do see regentrification happening. And what I want to do is, and what I've proposed and some of the things I've been working on, is we're ensuring that businesses that have been there, that have been established businesses in these neighborhoods, that are preserved. And also neighborhoods, because a lot of these neighborhoods are generational. And I grew up in a neighborhood like that. Southeast Colorado Springs is where I'm from. It's very diverse. It's generational. And so I want to make sure, and I think it's important as a council, we make sure that those neighborhoods stay and they're not pushed out.
Oh, absolutely. Because I have a son who's 28 and a granddaughter who's 5. Mm-hmm. And we want to maintain the integrity and the legacy of those neighborhoods so we can hand them off to our children and our children's children.
Right.
So what is Aurora doing now? What is the Aurora City Council and government doing now to try to minimize or stave off regentrification, or at least slow it down?
Well, I think what we're doing, we're trying to slow it down, but we have a housing task force that's providing recommendations for us. We don't have a set policy, but we're trying to develop a policy. We do need a policy in Aurora about how we're going to keep affordability in our community.
Okay.
And so we're working on that. We did just do a land trust with Elevation Land Trust. So that's a land trust basically it's land that's bought, a house is bought on there, and they make it affordable for a family. Okay. And so that's happening. Community land trusts are very important. But I also think that we need to look at, we have so many buildings in Aurora that are unused. And I think we can repurpose those for some affordable housing and supportive housing in our community. But I think you have to define what is affordable, because affordable is different to somebody else. Like for me, I have student loans. So I still live in the same townhome I've lived in 18 years ago, because $300,000 is not affordable to me.
And it's not affordable for most people.
Right.
Exactly. And if I'm correct, please keep me honest here. I was reading that the average medium income for Aurora citizens is between 55 to 56 thousand.
Exactly.
A year.
And we're building these homes that are between, that are starting points, 300,000 and up. And
right.
So I'm trying to figure out how are we accommodating the teachers, the firefighters, the housekeepers, the people that work at the Anschutz campus, middle class people.
Right.
They can't afford that. And then to me, there's a new type of redlining going on in our community because I deal with a lot of evictions. People call me about getting evicted out of their homes, senior citizens, you know, families, single families. And essentially, you know, people are raising, these management companies are raising the prices on rent and people can't afford it. So they're being evicted and becoming homeless.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen that in Denver, and it's becoming a problem in Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any legislation on the books right now that can help prevent this displacement of people that are being priced out of their homes?
Well, we don't have anything specific, but we have worked in our, we have a urban development type of council that we sit on as council members. And essentially, we have put some policies in place. And that's what I was talking about, preservation of businesses, preservation of neighborhoods, so they won't be so impacted about regentrification. But I also think we have to look at our development community. And I think that there's a lot of developers that we can, you know, if we go out into the world, I mean, we have good developers, but I think we need to get developers who are looking for an affordable model. But we also have to have a council as well that wants affordability. We really should have been more proactive on this a long time ago.
Absolutely. And it's just something that's kind of crept up
mm-hmm.
on both the citizens of Aurora and Denver alike. And next thing you know, it's like, okay, what's going on? We're losing control of our community. And then you try to take it back and you're so upside down on everything.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to get back to a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people of this community, the hardworking men and women who are being displaced, where are they going? I mean, if they don't have a friend or a relative to live with,
mm-hmm.
they're basically forced out on the street.
Well, and also a lot of people are doubling up, are living together because they're trying to make ends meet. You know, what I'm seeing in Aurora, when I moved here, you know, I look at this as a thriving Aurora community, and we are. And we're doing some great things in Aurora, so I'm not devaluing that.
That's very true.
But I also think what I'm seeing now is people are surviving and not thriving as much. And I'm maybe looking at the communities, especially communities of color, you know, people, senior citizens. Are we providing them an option where they can actually live and not have to choose between getting food, medication? And that's my concern. I really, Aurora was a place that I came and will stay because of affordability. I was able to buy something. I was able to rent something
mm-hmm.
and not be so, challenged because I got to just pay my rent and my mortgage every month.
Oh,
it shouldn't be that way.
No, it shouldn't be that way. And it's becoming that way.
And people are working multiple jobs.
Right. And we have more people moving.
Yeah.
Here,
right.
Which is also driving up demand
mm-hmm.
for housing.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are already living here can't afford
mm-hmm.
the housing. And
mm-hmm.
then they're being displaced by people that don't, mm-hmm. that don't live here.
Right.
So the economic scale is skewed to accommodate people who are transplants
mm-hmm.
and also accommodate the cost of living.
Right. And I also think there should be more community involvement when we're looking at affordable housing from our communities.
Agreed.
So.
Agreed. Absolutely. Well, I know you guys are trying to fight the good fight with that,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But until we have policy in place, reasonable, aggressive legislation to deal with that, and we have a fair balance of communication between the constituency and the government, that is something that's going to continue to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because taxation
mm-hmm.
and regentrification is going to outlast the people living in the properties
mm-hmm.
that reside in them.
And
now.
Also, you have to look at transportation as well.
You know,
putting these units near transport, you know, TOD sites, transit-oriented developments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are we looking at those? How are those structured? You know,
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't have transportation. Some affordable housing is great in those areas
right.
where we have transit or development.
Right, but they need to be able to be able to get to them.
Exactly.
And they need to be accessible
exactly.
because not everybody can afford to drive a car.
Exactly.
Because you have to pay insurance for a car.
Mm-hmm.
And in most places, you have to pay a CART note.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to keep your car, you have to have insurance.
And that's why the transportation near these particular housing developments is essential.
Okay. So yeah, we want people to have affordable housing, affordable, accessible transportation. Mm-hmm. And we want them to have this at an affordable price to live.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Now, on top of everything else that's going on, because that's at the top of the list, I want to back up for just a minute.
Okay.
And I want to talk about your background. You had mentioned that you had student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have on average anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000 in student loans, and sometimes even more.
Mm-hmm.
But you have quite an educational, scholastic, pedigree to be proud of. And so it is important, because as a woman of color, it is hard to get paid equal pay as a woman, and specifically as a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
So you have quite a bit of extensive education. Would you mind sharing that with the audience this morning?
I'm sure. I have a bachelor's degree from University of California at Berkeley. I have three masters, one from Georgetown University. That's the one that's causing me the big student loan debt. And I have two from University of Colorado at Denver.
Okay.
And although I have those degrees, and I'm working on a PhD right now, although I have those degrees, it doesn't mean that I'm economically successful in terms of getting the pay that is
equivalent
to my education.
Right. And that's why I wanted to kind of get into that, because I think you are a glowing example of a very educated, progressive, intelligent political activist.
Mm-hmm.
You are just wonderful. But at the same time, you also represent a dual issue.
Mm-hmm.
People who want to advance their education and advance their lot in life have to come saddled with tens and hundred thousand dollars of debt.
Right.
And it shouldn't have to be that way.
It shouldn't have to be that way. Yeah. And I know a lot of people say, well, you chose those schools. And that's fine. I have debt because I didn't have wealth. You know, I had to go on student loans, and
yeah,
I wanted to advance
do.
My education.
Absolutely.
So that is part of my reality and part of what I'm challenged with. I right now couldn't afford to buy anything, a single family. I'm in the same townhome I'm in.
Right.
Because I am challenged with student debt. And I don't think that's in the equation when we're talking about affordable housing a lot of times. Student debt, you know, millennials right now, you know, a lot of millennials go to college and they have debt. A lot of them are living with their parents.
Yeah, because they couldn't afford to live on their own.
Right.
Because most places start at about $2,000 a month.
Right.
And most young people getting on their feet and out the door fresh from college in hand can't really put it to use right away without some type of significant financial help. And this is where the color barrier and the socioeconomic barriers come up. When you look at some endowments from various colleges and universities throughout the country and the world, some of them could supplant over three countries. And I am a big believer that if you have that kind of endowment and you have a person that has no felonies and they're good standing and they're a graduate and they were a good student, pay their debt for them.
I agree.
Let them get on with their life. So I think those endowments shouldn't be reserved for those who are elite, those who are of a certain color class, economic class. If you have an endowment that's in the billions, in the millions, give that money back to those who have attended your school, who are your alma mater. Help those who are trying to get into school so they don't have debt, but help those that have incurred the debt and who are your alma mater and who are actually positively contributing to society.
And, you know, I'm not trying to bring up a will, but in my will that I have all the schools. I have all, like, any, if I'm not married or nothing, because I'm not married.
Yeah.
But I have everything that will go to the schools I went to give someone a scholarship or something in public administration.
Absolutely.
That's how it's set up right now, because I feel like I want to give back or help a student. And it has to be a student that's struggling, that can't afford to go to school.
Absolutely.
Not someone who has wealth and can't afford it.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if we just pay it forward, even with $1,000, $500, that could pay for books. It could pay for housing for a month. We just don't know how to recycle the financial resources of the financial institutions in this country. Just like with the financial institutions of our banks and lending and our social security system, our welfare system, we are stuck in neutral. And we're not paying it forward to people who really need it.
And that's why I think it's important, too. Something else that we're bringing up in the city of Aurora, especially in our Northwest Colfax area, mm-hmm. is community wealth building, community banking.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have those establishments. And a lot of people of color can't get loans. I mean, that's still happening today.
Absolutely.
And to get a business or to get a loan to buy a home or anything. So I think it's important when we're looking at certain communities as well in our in Aurora, especially our Northwest Aurora. Mm-hmm. We need to look at, we're looking at community wealth building, and we're looking at community banking. We need to consider those things as well.
Oh, absolutely. Now, if everybody would contribute like $50 mm-hmm. into a community account to help someone get a home or put a down payment on a car just to get around and help pay for their insurance for 6 months, community wealth building and community just community financing in general, I'm a huge believer in that mm-hmm. Because there are some people who have to and I'm not trying to be inflammatory when I say this, have to go to payday loan places. Now, they're structured differently because the laws have been changed. Mm-hmm. So they're not as predatory as they used to be. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that don't have $1,000 in the bank. They don't have 6 months worth of income mm-hmm. just sitting around to tap into in case they get laid off or they have a crisis. So the financial and fiduciary responsibility, both socially, economically, in everyday life, in housing, personal, business, employment, government, and education is so vital. Mm-hmm. And we got to continue to reinvest and pay it forward.
Right.
So before we continue our conversation, mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and take a quick pause okay. for our station identification. Then we'll get back to this great conversation. You guys are all listening to Public Affair on KGNU Community Radio. I am your host, Tish Buford. And in the studio this morning, we have the lovely and wonderful Aurora Councilwoman at Large, Angela Lawson, in studio with us, discussing the ongoing initiatives and issues with the Aurora constituency. And we're going to go ahead and get back in to another topic here that's been in the news, and that is with the GEO Detention Center that is in Aurora. So, what do you guys have on your agenda as far as addressing that and all of the backlash that's come from the last protest?
So I know that Councilmember Hiltz is bringing something. Something went to public safety regarding the health issues
okay.
and that. And I don't have it all. I don't have everything in front of me because I'm not part of that policy committee.
And absolutely.
But it is basically to deal with the health issues. And I guess for police and for fire to be able to go over into that, into the GEO Center if something
okay.
happens.
Okay.
So again, I don't have all of that because they were in policy committee last week. I know that in our policy committees, we have three council members that serve on the policy committee
okay.
and that went forward.
Okay.
Now, as you know, we have had a lot of people come, a lot of our constituency come to public invited to be heard saying we need to do something.
Absolutely.
And I know council just last council meeting, we, most of us of the council, we actually supported, Congressman Crow, I don't know the exact HR number, to allow him to make unsolicited visits. He can go at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So the council, most of the council at the study session supported that.
Oh, that's good. That's
so
progress.
That's progress.
Absolutely.
Because I think a congressperson should be able to go to the facility at any time. They're
Absolutely.
They're in Congress.
Unannounced.
Unannounced.
Absolutely.
So that's what that was. I don't know the exact bill number, but most of the council supported that.
And when did that House resolution go into effect?
I think it has to still go through.
Okay.
But what they wanted to do is they wanted to have other cities to sign on to the letter that
okay.
were supportive of that.
All right.
So I still think it has to go through the congressional process.
Okay, very good. But it's gotten out of committee.
Right.
Okay, so
right.
that's a start.
Right.
All right. And is there a timeline?
Well, the committee one that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. the HR thing, that's the congressional thing that the
right.
council signed on. Many right. cities and organizations signed on that to allow.
Right. On a higher level.
On a higher level.
Right.
So that has to go through the congressional process.
Right.
The initial thing that went out of the policy, public safety committee. I'm sorry. That is a initiative that was that those three council members talking about that we can allow. We're going to observe the health and safety of what's going on at the facility, and I think to allow fire to go in there if something happens. Okay. But again, I don't have all of the information or what was proposed.
Okay. So, all right. But it sounds like on a congressional level and on a city level, mm-hmm. They're both progressing.
Right.
Concurrently. Okay.
Right. We're doing something. We don't have any contracts as of that I know of that are associated with GEO.
Okay.
So that was brought up at our council meeting on Monday, and as of that time, there has been no contracts that we have with the GEO Center.
Okay. All
so
right.
Because I know that was kind of a thing brought up in Denver.
Absolutely.
Right.
And you're aware of the vote that was taken.
Right.
Not to renew the contract.
Right.
With
exactly.
them. And you may not know this, but is anyone aware of when or if there is a term limit for the contract that's in place with them now?
I don't know that information. I'm
okay.
sorry. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
I know that, you know, the city, we've given them a permit.
Okay.
So, you know, they are in the city of Aurora.
Okay.
We do permit them. So I don't know that information though.
All right. But it would be something to find out that mm-hmm. would be interesting though.
Right.
You know, just as a contracted facility mm-hmm. That wasn't organically built, you know, mm-hmm. from Aurora government, mm-hmm. But they were leasing facilities mm-hmm. to create this GEO Center by way of permit. Mm-hmm. So I think that's information that would be very helpful.
Right.
So if that's something that the Aurora legislators can get to the bottom to, I think that would be great public information.
Well, I think that probably will be brought up, especially with what's, you know, it's on the foresight of the community.
Absolutely.
So I think as people keep coming to talk about it at council meetings, mm-hmm. I think that we're going to have to be addressing a little bit more things. This is just my personal view.
Absolutely.
On the permitting process.
Absolutely.
And also some other things as well that's going on at the center. So
absolutely.
It's in Aurora. So people are like, well, it's a federally owned facility, but it's in Aurora.
Right. It's in Aurora.
Right.
Can we say that again?
It's in Aurora.
Aurora. Right. And how many men, women, and children are housed there? Do we know?
I don't know the exact number on that.
Okay.
But I'm going to actually tour the facility tomorrow.
Okay, awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I have not been to the facility.
All right.
So I want to, I'm touring it tomorrow.
Okay, well.
So I can actually, if this interview was probably tomorrow, I probably could give you a little bit more insight, but my tour is tomorrow.
All right, well, you know what?
Because I want to see what's going on, even though I know I'm not going to be able to see some things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the fact that you're going to take the tour, mm-hmm. it says a lot. So bless you for doing that. And yeah, we'll definitely get a report from you.
Okay.
And we'll make sure that information becomes public. Now, we have been discussing over the last few minutes here about your background, your involvement in government. And one thing that I was noticing just real quickly in your bio, you served as the mayor pro tem back in 2017. Mm-hmm. So that was quite an honor. How was that?
It was. That happens very rarely that a new council member becomes the mayor pro tem in her second year. I was honored to serve underneath Mayor Hogan, our former mayor who passed away.
Yes.
We didn't agree on everything, but he really did put me out there in the community.
Right.
So I got an idea of how it was to serve in that capacity. And you are selected by by the council members.
Absolutely.
So I was elected by, you know, selected by the council members. So it was a very great, it was a fantastic experience. Some things I was like, Mayor Hogan, are you sure you want to put? He goes, you're ready. So yes, I was the mayor pro tem then, which is considered kind of the deputy mayor. You fill in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that had to be quite an honor.
It was. And for people to see, they're like, you're the mayor pro tem? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I am.
Well, it's not only on ceremony, but it's also a statement,
mm-hmm.
okay, that women of color can lead
mm-hmm.
and be put into leadership.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's why I wanted to touch on that real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked about immigration, housing, socioeconomic issues in Aurora, but there were a couple of things specifically that you've championed for that affected you, that you had personal experience mm-hmm. with, that we wanted to talk about real quickly today. Mm-hmm. Did you want to go ahead and share some of that?
Yeah,
with us?
I'll share three things really quickly. The one that I'm really, really proud of, and I think is significant, is our massage parlor ordinance. I was impacted directly by this. I have a hairdresser, and this was in an office building. And down the hall was a massage parlor business that was doing human trafficking of young girls.
Wow.
My hairdresser I was exposed to the men. We would be sitting at, you know, getting my hair done, and men would be outside, or they would be trying to come to the massage parlor. And so my hairdresser had brought this to my attention. She's been there for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. But the owner, the business people that own the management company told her to mind her business. So being a council person, I took that as an initiative that I wanted to progress with. And sure enough, we closed down 18 massage parlors in Aurora.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, Nine News just did a story on the massage parlors, and they have moved to Denver.
Okay.
So they're kind of transitioning out. Okay. But it is an issue. It's an underground world,
right,
of things, of human trafficking. It's a public safety issue.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad that this ordinance has worked in Aurora, because there was quite, to close down 18, and we're watching a couple more.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you guys are on top of that. I'm sad to hear that they relocated to Denver.
And now it's kind of, and they did a news story on that. So they did an investigative report. Now they're kind of moving to different jurisdictions.
Okay.
And that's the thing, to stop it. I mean, how can we do it? Because it's a lot going on. It's human trafficking, number
right.
one.
Right.
It's prostitution. This particular one, this lady came from Lakewood, and she had actually got a ticket for prostitution, but then she was in Aurora. And then I found out there was 3 massage parlors in that building, mm-hmm. and they all got closed down.
Wow. Well, keep up the good work. And mm-hmm. again, I'm sad to hear that they're relocating, but it's the nature mm-hmm. of what you're doing. But as long as we keep bringing it to the forefront mm-hmm. and making it public, mm-hmm. we can keep shutting them down and forcing them to relocate and then not locate at all mm-hmm. and shut them down permanently mm-hmm. once and for all. So thank you for your great work on that. And the other legislators that were helping you with that. Now, 2 other things really, really quickly that you wanted to touch on.
Just the lobbying ordinance. Okay. As you know, I regulate lobbyists. That's my day job. That's what I've been doing for a long period of time.
With the Secretary of State's
office. With the Secretary of State's office.
Right.
I brought the ordinance forward because we do get lobbied at the city level. Those same individuals that lobby us at the state, they lobby us here. And I think there needs to be some transparency on that front. Because what I think is important is that people understand, are your decisions, the decisions that are being made, are they on your best interests as a constituency,
right.
or are we looking at special interest?
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, it didn't pass.
Wow.
But I knew it wasn't going to pass, because there's always some lobbying amongst council members.
Okay.
But the thing that really kind of bothered me a little bit is that during the time, no one said anything on that council of why they were against it. So it was silent, and it was a 5-4 vote.
And nobody spoke up.
No one spoke to me of why it wasn't a good thing.
But that speaks volumes. Sometimes silence says more than words.
But I'm going to keep pushing it as long as I'm on this council.
Absolutely.
I'm going to continue to push this, because other jurisdictions, even Denver requires reporting.
Right. And
we're growing. There's a lot of things happening.
Absolutely.
We do get influenced.
Okay. Well, keep up the good work and don't be discouraged by that. That's a phenomenal bill. It has to be passed. And I know you will eventually get it passed, because I know you're tenacious and you're not going to give up. So good work with that. And real quickly, before we go today, what was the last thing that you were working on?
The last thing that I established in the city that I'm very proud of is our civic engagement program,
okay. Academy.
When I was running for office, people didn't know about what city government did. They didn't know mm-hmm. about the programs. They didn't know about the policies. They didn't know how to come to public invited to be heard. And so I created this particular civic engagement program to get more people in our communities to be involved in the political process, because I don't think people realize your voice does matter.
Angela Lawson, Aurora City Councilwoman at Large. Thank you for listening. I've been your host, Tish Buford. Have a great day, and thank you for listening.